What is up, everyone? Welcome to Toffee Blues USA, your source for all things Everton American style. I'm Jerry Gibson, coming to you from it's not the normal spot. I'm just gonna say it's my bedroom. It's not my normal recording space, but I've adjusted because I don't know. I just felt like it was important for everybody to know what we're saying. So I'm in bed and just relaxed. And guess what? I'm enjoying a nice saison from Schoolhouse Brewing in Georgia. So yeah, let's do it. All right. So joining me today, this is a cool occasion because we've got a new friend. So we've got Mike Sprogue joining us from Baltimore, Maryland. Mike, it's good to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Jerry. I appreciate you inviting a stranger into your bedroom. That's yes. Not necessarily what was maybe taught to me in grade school, but I think it's a bold choice. Let's see how it works out for us this evening.
I'm a huge fan of Mike already, everybody. I'm just going to say it. So Mike, if you could talk to us a little bit about what do you do? Like, what do you do up in Baltimore, man?
Generally as little as possible. I have the great fortune or misfortune, depending on the day, of actually working for myself. I have a payments technology company, so I provide the platforms for small businesses to process payments. If you need to invoice, mm-hmm. process a credit card transaction, electronic check, that sort of thing. So I get to work with a bunch of entrepreneurs and business owners to help them run their businesses.
Yeah, awesome. You know, I think the closest I ever came to that particular world was at a time I worked for a company called Global Payments, and which before was Merchant Services. And basically, we were credit card equipment, you know, and I worked in the warehouse in inventory, and I was just pulling orders, essentially deployments. That was what I was in. Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly. Global is a very large player in that space. I'm just a tiny little solo shop. I've worked for some of the bigger businesses and kind of took what I could learn. And kind of before that, I was in restaurants and some other entrepreneurial areas, and really enjoy the ability to work with the smaller folks to help their businesses. And that's what I get a lot of. I get a lot of joy out of that.
So that's what I was going to ask. I was going to say what drew you to that, but that you already answered. That's awesome. That so helping out the smaller businesses and the personal connections.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very cool. Yeah. That all makes sense. So what doesn't make sense to a lot of people when I'm in America, and actually it's when I'm in England, like I recently was in England, and I probably, what I heard the most was, why Everton? Mm. Why Everton? So if you could talk to us about your Everton history, if you will.
Yes. Yeah, so the 2010 World Cup, I at the time had a restaurant, and we were showing games in the restaurant, and built up a lot of excitement in our little community here in Baltimore over it. And I have a very good friend who is Algerian. And that was the game where Landon slid in with that goal at the very end, the dagger. I actually got to keep his Algerian flag for a week that he had been flying out in front of his restaurant. So we had a great crowd for that. And after the tournament, we had a lot of people asking us to play Premier League games, and they had just started being shown in the US on kind of regular broadcast TV. You could get them. And I was like, great, I'm all for it. Let's do it. I don't have a team, right? That the Premier League was something I had seen. I was aware of, you know, Wayne Rooney, and I was aware of Beckham and Ronaldo and kind of the big names that you would see, but yeah. I didn't have any affiliation for any of the teams. And so I was talking to one of the guys that worked for me, Ricky Johnson. Ricky, if you see this, hi there. And he's a big Chaucer fan. And I was like, I want to get a team, but I don't want to have like what everybody's team is. And he was like, all right, well, Who do you want to support? I said, well, what part of England is a lot like Baltimore? What part is a lot, you know, that working class spirit, the little, maybe a little, yes, chip on our shoulder that kind of gets ignored. Nobody really knows where it is if you're not from, you know, the country. He's like, oh, definitely Liverpool. You want to be a Liverpool fan? I was like, oh, okay, I'll be a Liverpool fan. And he was like, well, hold on a second. You're a Yankee fan. I was like, yeah. He's like, weren't you born in the Bronx? I was like, yeah, lifelong Yankee fan. He's like, you can't cheer for Liverpool. I was like, all right, well, why not? He's like, the Red Sox own Liverpool. And I was like, oh, well, F that. F that. Who's their rival? And he goes, they play across the park from this team called Everton. I was like, I'm an Evertonian. And it was that moment on, never looked back. I've had some moments of regret.
Yeah.
But from that moment on, I picked Everton. And then, you know, Landon had his spell with us. And Tim, obviously, I've got my classic Tim Howard camouflage in the background here. Fell in love deeply with the club and with what we stand for and how we go and approach things. And it has been a great, great ride. And look, not the best 10-year stretch we've had. You know, losing David Moyes, our very brief adventure in Europe that one year where we basically had a cup of tea and departed. And then the carousel, right? That absolute nightmare scenario that we've been in the past few years, trying to find who's the guy for us to take us to that next level. Yeah, that's been really my Everton journey. You know, I'm lucky enough here that the early games for me are only 7:30. I know that the guys on the West Coast suffer through that and legitimately wake up early. So I feel blessed that we don't have to do that too much. But I've been fortunate to be able to watch a lot of soccer, and it has been a deeply rewarding club to cheer for. And, you know, we talked a little bit before we started about some of the things the club has done to kind of pay back that loyalty, and it's been absolutely worthwhile. So,
yeah. And so we'll get into that here in just a bit, cause it's definitely a good story, on behalf of the club. So we talked about how you got into Everton. Which player, like, you're throughout the time you've been supporting Everton, which player do you feel like is the closest to the embodiment of Mike Sprogue's personality?
Oh, personality?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. I love Tim. Like, I love Tim Howard. And, you know, the dream is to finally get to meet him a little bit. He played when he was with Colorado. He came and played in DC at Audi Field, and it was my first chance to get to see him live. And you know, I fangirled over him hard that the entire half that he was on our side. So, you know, I'd be hard pressed to say that somebody that, you know, really lives the goal to try to work hard but stay humble. You know, obviously we all struggle in America with the stay humble part. But he's a guy that went over to, really an alien environment when I think Friedel had been almost one of the only other guys that had found some success, in going over there, and really worked his ass off to become something special. You know, that 2014, that Belgian game, you know, just brought me to tears what he was able to do in such a magical night. And it didn't work out for us in the end. But a guy who left everything on the field for the club, certainly for the national team, for us here. And you know, would love to be able to shake his hand one day and, you know, and just say hi and thanks for all those wonderful memories. You know, that farewell game, oh, that was rough. You know, him in the black kit, you know, clapping and walking around, and just Everton giving him so much love on his last day. And yeah, I'll never forget that. So certainly came in because and was attracted to the fact that we brought an American into the club and supported him. But his play and his intensity and his focus was always something that I've absolutely admired.
Nice. Who out of the current crop of players, who's your the player you connect with the most now? Like that's a current player.
The guy that I there's two from this year that have really stood out to me. Seamus Coleman, pardon me. Getting on later in his career, asked to do a tremendous amount for the club, and a guy that will bury himself physically. He will leave the field broken, bleeding for this club with nothing asked in return. He's a guy that will show up every time he's asked to come on the field. He will give 100% intensity. He will get into, you know, he's not that big of a dude. He'll take Traore on. He'll stare down some giant. He'll put it all out there. Just, you know, when he's on the field, he's a monster. He's our monster, and he goes for it 100%. Somebody else this year that really stood out to me that I have been critical of in years past that I think has made a remarkable turnaround is Alex Iwobi. The amount of criticism and just press and Twitter and Facebook and Reddit posts that have been anti-Iwobi, you know, I don't know if he pays attention to any of that stuff. You got to think it filters back. You got to think that he's at least aware of how people thought he was overrated and you know, certainly under Rafa, he didn't do anything for us and kind of suffered under Carlo too, where he wasn't great. He seems to have really found a connection with Frank where he's become this really invaluable source of stability through the midfield. And, you know, his finesse and his touch bringing the ball forward has been incredible. And then he's hauling ass to get back on defense. And he's becoming what I think a lot of us would have hoped he would have been the very first day. You know, if I had to give like a superlative award, most improved, I definitely would go to him. Has just impressed me. And the fact that he's done it in the face of the criticism, in the face of all of the negativity, and in quite frankly, a year where if I'm a professional footballer, I'm starting to question, like, why am I even here? Like, this is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. This is a nightmare scenario. You know, we were at the beginning of the season talking about, you know, top six, and now we're talking about how do we get out of the bottom three. So the season did not go well for those guys. To have the courage and the mental toughness to stick through that and to continue to go out and work hard and get faster and to get your passes better and to get, you know, to buy into a new manager system and, you know, halfway through the season. Really incredible. And I think we're lucky to have him. And I know that we're going to go through a ton of roster change here in the next few weeks. I certainly hope Alex is wearing our kit next year and is out there to take us forward.
Oh, yeah. And I think we definitely need to delve into that when we talk about, give our season thoughts and our thoughts about Lampard's performance and everything. Because there's definitely something to be said for especially a player like Iwobi, the way they've improved under Lampard, it's been impressive. So let's move on to your supporters group. So give us a little bit about the Baltimore Toffees, where you folks like to meet up, give a little history of the group, and then we'll get a little deeper.
Well, I am relatively late to the Baltimore Toffees. For the longest time, I was coaching and going to kid soccer early on Saturday mornings. And so often I would have to watch games, you know, either on DVR or kind of after or between kid practices. I was at one of my daughter's practices on a Saturday morning when Jackie Elke hit that equalizer against Liverpool from, you know, from beyond the moon. And I was screaming. I was holding my iPad and watching the game on the sideline, and I got yelled at by the ref for that. So they just didn't understand.
No.
Did get some weird looks from the other parents. The group formed around a couple guys, AJ Rosenthal and JT Delaney, mm-hmm. who kind of took the lead in kind of coalescing the group. We in this past year decided to take the next step from just kind of being a loose association of individuals that love this club and will get together occasionally. And we actually set up some organization. We incorporated in the state of Maryland as a charitable organization. Went through the process. We've got an EIN from the IRS and all of the documents to prove that we're a real boy, if you will. And we have decided that as we go forth and continue, we want to really embrace the club's value of giving back to the community and being invested in the community that we are. So we've been able to have a series of fundraisers this past year. Obviously COVID maybe dampened some of that. We were able to donate $600 to our local chapter of NAMI, which is the National Association for Mental Illness. It's a topic that's near and dear to a lot of our hearts, and certainly through COVID, I think a lot of us are more familiar with mental illness now than we were probably 2 years ago. Certainly no one's getting out of this thing entirely unscathed. And thought it was important to, you know, as we were, you know, getting together and having a great time, to also be reaching out and be fully invested in the values of what Everton are, in the community, active giving back. Would now be a good time to talk about what happened earlier this year.
So, Mike, talk to me about a little bit about the what you were going to delve into when the club stepped in and helped out Baltimore Toffees.
Yeah, so sadly, earlier this year in Baltimore, there was a really tragic accident during a fire that had broken out one of our row houses here in town. And four firefighters were tragically killed when the floor collapsed. And it's a big hit. You know, we're a city, but we're really much more of a small town. And so something like that, where, you know, you lose four people who have dedicated their lives to protecting and serving the community is just a huge loss. And we had some watch parties that were coming up, and we decided that we would, as a supporters group in Baltimore, kind of rally around and try to do some fundraising around that to raise some funds for the widows and an orphan fund that the Baltimore City Fire Department administers for these types of occasions. And as we were in the middle of our planning and starting to put some social media out, the team actually reached out to us, the folks that do fan engagement. We hadn't thought to bother them. You know, we were, you know, 5-6 weeks into the new management. We certainly didn't think that they were paying any attention to what we were up to. And they couldn't have been more wonderful in asking in a way that they could help in anything. And the team sent over a jersey signed by all the players of the first team. They were able to do this incredibly quickly. They got it organized and got it done and got it to us. And we were able to organize a watch party at our local home base, a little bar called Region Ale over in the Canton section of Baltimore. When you visit, go see Kevin over at Region Ale. They take wonderful care of us. And we were able to drive a lot of engagement through that and actually host a raffle that we opened up to both the nation. And we even had some donations come in from Liverpool, and attached to them were, hey, I don't want to win the shirt, just want to help support what you guys are up to. And we were able to raise in maybe like 10 days, $2,600 for the widows and children's fund in Baltimore. And it was incredibly touching for the team to be able to not only pay attention to what we're up to and to feel that there's this connection and this sense of, hey, we're all in this together, and your community is hurting, and we can do a small part in our way to do that. And the day of the game that we did the drawing, we had the head of the fire union come out, and coincidentally, a fire engine worth of guys was across the parking lot picking up, doing grocery shopping. So he ran over, grabbed those guys. They came in the bar with us. They were hanging out for the drawing. They were asking us, where is Everton? what sport is this? But those guys were able to hang out with us for a little bit. And I think they were blown away by the fact that, you know, this group that they've never heard of, supporting a team they've never heard of in a sport that they probably don't watch, were able to help in a time that they were all going through some terrible times. And it was incredibly meaningful for us to know that the team cares, and the team cares about us. They care about what we're going through. And, you know, as much as we scream and complain and whine, there are some absolutely wonderful, wonderful people in our organization that that make this a truly special club. Yeah. So I can't say enough good things about what the club was able to do for us there. And I'll tell you, we can't release too many plans about what's coming up for their visit to Baltimore, but they have been absolutely wonderful to work with, and really energetic and excited to be here. And I, you know, I'll be honest, you tell some folks like, hey, we're going to go visit Baltimore, you don't always get the most enthusiastic response. Like, hey kids, we're going to Baltimore. We're probably just above Cleveland on the excitement level. Apologies to Ohio. But they are really excited to come and to share this weekend with us, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, come on, Mike. We all would like to flee to the Cleve whenever we can. It's I'll say I was very psyched when I heard Baltimore was on the list, because that's actually pretty close to where I am. You know, that's like a, you know, 7-hour drive for us, something like that. It's not bad. It's not bad at all. I gotta figure out if I can. See, I'm supposed to be in Orlando, Florida during that week. It's gonna be a tough one, and it stinks. Hey,
it's a good time to send your wife on vacation and apologize for
just leave in the middle of it. And be like, I know I'm supposed to be here for the rest of this.
I'm gonna go get a Dole Whip. I'll be back 2 days later.
Oh man, I need you to kind of plan my life, Mike. Let's work on this. So obviously, you know, you mentioned Everton preseason plan. They're coming to Baltimore, and they're also going to be in Minnesota. First match is with Arsenal. Second one's, I think, some Minnesota United. Vastly, no, they're totally similar opponents. They're just photocopies of each other, really. It's very, very different viewing experiences, I would expect. Vastly different. I think totally different types of stadium experiences, and totally different teams they'll be playing against. It's interesting. I'd really love to hear the, like, this is why we did this, you know, because I always love to hear the why. You know, because you can kind of make some assumptions about a few things, I think, with Inchy being in the Minnesota area, you know, like, so got that connection a little bit. But in Baltimore's like East Coast. And, you know, I feel like not a lot of people understand. It's a good soccer town. There's a lot of good youth soccer clubs there.
Yeah, we've got, if you see the we've got a great local soccer writer. He works out of the Washington Post, Steve Goff, and he'll post the kind of the viewing numbers for MLS games, Women's World Cup games, men's games. And Baltimore's always in the top five. If you combine it with, you know, Baltimore, D.C., we're number one for viewing almost every time, certainly in the National League or the national team setting. So we are a really strong soccer town. Every club that I'm aware of has a supporters group that is based here in town and have their own separate little bars.
Wow, I didn't know that.
We've got a number. I know where the Liverpool bar is. I know where the Manchester United bar is. The Arsenal bar. Like, everybody's got kind of their own little piece of turf carved out. We're going to be looking to kind of grow our presence before the next season. We've been making some plans, but then the club, the team decided that we might not be in the Premier League, so we had to like hold off on what we were planning because we're like, we don't really want to take the lead in planning something if we're the one championship side. Like, hey guys, let's get together, and everybody's like, you don't even go here.
Who are you?
Go find Swansea and shut up. So we really relieved that we get to stay at the level we're at and move on from there. But yeah, we're gonna try to do some cross supporter group events and. Cool. The one thing I know is soccer people in the U.S. are great people. There have been, limited times where we've been traveling where, at a DC United match where there's some guys who are looking to fight, but they're not really soccer fans. They're fight fans. They came out looking to get drunk and get into a fight. Yep. And it's got nothing to do with the game. It's got nothing to do with the supporter culture and the folks who are here that will support a team that will show up at 7:30 in the morning at a bar in downtown, always wonderful people. And so we're looking to kind of cross some of the groups together and do some fun stuff with everybody. And this event, I think the team coming to Baltimore is a great catalyst for that, because we're going to get to show everybody what a great city Baltimore is, a great soccer town. I wish that the Ravens, who are administering the tickets, had let us have some input onto how the tickets were to be distributed, because we're going to be mixed in. We tried to take over one of the end zones. We put the call out as soon as tickets opened. We said, hey, go to this certain section. Let's try to buy as many tickets as we can. So we'll have a healthy concentration of blue in the east end zone. But being a supporter in MLS, we've been able to, like, when you go on the road, you know where you're sitting. It's in the nosebleed. It's way up there, and it's not the seats aren't great, but you're all sitting together. This experience will be a little strange, because it'll be Everton, Arsenal fans all mixed in together, casual soccer fans, kids that have seen these guys play on TV and have no interest in either club, but they just want to see a good soccer game. So should be a great time.
It's funny, like my buddy is a massive hockey fan, a massive American football fan. He loves the Rangers, loves the Giants. And he didn't understand why there were supporters sections, like specific why they separated them. And I was like, well, in other countries, it doesn't go so well when you put them in the same immediate area. It gets pretty explosive. Here in the States, though, it just doesn't happen as much. I think there's maybe certain places where notorious for having a little more fighting than others.
But, you got to show them the moat at Azteca and be like, hey, they dug a moat for a reason. They really did it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's the main thing, is trying to explain that, but that's, everybody is talking about, like, right now on Twitter, if for all you people out there, people are already making their plans. They're already figuring out who they're going to meet up with. It's like last summer, part two. A lot of people had a lot of fun. And if you're thinking about going, but you've been nervous about it, I would say, I think it's one of those things where you're going to walk away feeling closer to the club if you go. And you're going to have a lot, there's going to be some human connection you didn't have before. It's just such a welcoming fan base to kind of get together with these folks. The stories I heard about last year in Florida. It sounds like a blast. And who knows, we may win another trophy. We got one last time, you know, I mean, who knows?
We can call it the Charm City Cup, and we're happy to award it to the blue team.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it, Mike. Make it happen, Mike.
a couple of old bay tins. We'll weld them together, make a trophy out of them.
Love this. This plan cannot lose. So hopefully we'll get more information as we go. I definitely don't want to put Mike in any uncomfortable position of telling information before he's supposed to, but just think the wealth of knowledge that sits in this man's brain, he just not allowed to share with us just yet.
So what I can share is that we are definitely going to have an event Friday night that will feature an ambassador from the club. And the team is committed to making that something really special. And we're identifying venues now and working with them to find a place. I'll tell you that we had experience of like, hey, how about this place? And like, bigger. I'm like, how about this place? And they're like, no, bigger. How about this place? We're like, well, you're getting close.
Wow.
So our kind of understanding and scope of what this is going to be has really has grown over the past week or so. And I'll tell you that we are very, very excited. We've got a fantastic Baltimore Toffee member, Alan Brody, who has kind of spearheaded the efforts here and has done just a tremendous job in finding us resources in and around town to do some things. And Peter Hanna, another one of our members, is our contact with the fire department and has put us in touch with our game day base, which is going to be over at the Union Fire Hall. So that we can share. But there's going to be a lot more going on that is still in the works. The team is still putting together their final touches. As you can imagine, everybody's working kind of overtime to make this thing happen in the 5 weeks that we've got until we're all together.
That feels really short amount of time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But boy, we are absolutely excited. And in just the conversations we've had with the club, they are committed to doing something really special here. And it's a bit of a dream come true. I never thought I was going to get to see Everton play until I got over to Liverpool and got to Goodison. So to have this opportunity now is just tremendous, especially in town. Yeah.
That is just, that sounds amazing. I can't imagine the meetings y'all are having where you're just kind of like, oh, this is so cool, you know, but also you're able to sit there and you're able to contribute just as much because you're suggesting locations. You're kind of representatives for your community. It's just very cool. I feel like Everton's making it's just some smart moves doing this. I think it's just very smart on their behalf. So it seems like although not everything is going great on the field, you know, stuff like this is okay. That's
great. Hey, we ended strong, man. That's all that counts. Everything done we needed to get done.
By the way, seamless transition into the next segment. Seamless. So we should at least, we haven't really been able to meet and discuss the season at all, you know, on the show at all. So let's, Mike, try not to get too worked up, but just give us some brief thoughts and then I'll toss you some questions that are probably super softball for you and I'll just let you run.
Okay. I'm looking back on the results now because I don't have everything memorized, mostly because I blocked most of February to the end of April out.
That's a good way to be, Mike.
So I'm just looking over some of the things. You know, we take down Leeds 3-0, and then we drop 2 to Southampton. You know, Man City, what we weren't expected to win. And then we go to Spurs and get annihilated. And I think that was when I started to worry that we actually didn't have anything left. Yeah. Because that I do remember that match as being particularly awful in the fact that we just didn't seem to be able to get anything together. Drop the next one to Wolves, and then somehow clawed one back against Newcastle. And then we dropped to West Ham, we dropped to Burnley, and we beat Man United. Like it the season made no sense. Where we were supposed to get points, we gave them away. Where there were supposed to be nothing, we managed to pull something out. The draw at Leicester, obviously the result at Liverpool, which I'm still salty about, man. It wasn't right. The calls weren't right. The refereeing around this season, you know, we managed to get the apology after the Manchester City match, but it felt like we were paying for it for the rest of the year. Like, yeah, you made us look bad because we fucked up that call so bad. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make you pay for this with every other call that you get. And that
it didn't feel like that, man. It really
that
did.
That derby was you know, I don't even know how they feel good about winning that one. I've got some very good friends who are Reds, and you know, we'll jab each other. They were muted after that one. They weren't, you know, singing too much about that. When I thought that we were going down was the Brentford loss. That was kind of my darkest point of the season, when we let them come back and take those points away that we desperately needed, knowing that we had Palace and Arsenal as the only two things left. I didn't see what I needed to see on the field, and I went into that Palace game absolutely crying. I canceled appointments. I missed a networking meeting that morning so that I could prepare for Crystal Palace on that Thursday. And God, the heart that this team showed. The incredible, you know, kind of coming off of Pickford's performance against Chelsea to give us that clean sheet. I figured we'd have some ability to get it back. I thought we'd lost it all with Brentford, but then for them to claw back like that, and the absolute iconic goals that came from that Palace win to take us to safety. And I was in tears in my kitchen. I was running around the place. I was watching everybody, you know, storm the pitch. And kudos to NBC for sticking with us.
Stayed with it.
And for showing what it meant, because, you know, very rarely in American sports do we get something that means this much. And this is the battle to stay out of the bottom. Like, this isn't a world championship. No. This wasn't a cup. This was us continuing on in the league that we belong in, the league that we founded. And I'll tell you what just a magical, magical night. And if anyone was ever like a casual Everton fan, I don't know how they watch that and decide that they're not diehard blue forever.
I feel like, you know, you hear these people's moments, you know, like that was the moment, that game, that moment, that goal, that time, that player. And I feel like that particular game, you're right. I think there had to be a neutral or two swayed just by the like human spirit on display at the end of that one. That's the crazy thing. And I know it was mocked relentlessly by a lot of clubs, and I didn't really care. Yeah, we had a crap season, and we figured out a way to get out of it, and we didn't get relegated. And to be honest with you, with the results we had, you know, it was a possibility, very distinct. So I don't really care about anybody else judging our celebration.
I love that the Reds tried to recreate our pre-match excitement, and they managed to catch their own bus on fire. I thought that was just the perfect analogy of manufactured passion and absolute like, hey, here's the team giving out flares to people like, we need you to cheer. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's not what we're about. You saw the heart of this community. You saw it uplift those guys. You saw it overwhelm, you know, when Richie scored, you know, and the energy you could feel, you could see it on the TV, you could feel it flowing through that mm-hmm. stadium. Man, special day.
Were you, let's talk about this dude and then stop talking about him. When they appointed Benitez, were you one of the immediate, like, get him out, this is a dumb idea voices? Or were you one of the, let's give him a chance, maybe he's got something up his sleeve, maybe there's still a manager in there? Or were you kind of a little bit of both?
I'll tell you, when he was hired, I thought it was a terrible, terrible idea, just because of the animosity that exists between the fan base and our neighbors across the park there. Mm-hmm. And he had been such an important part of that, and his comments about us before, that's tough to go back on.
Yeah.
Right. It's tough to go back on. The same way that I know Alex Cora is never going to come manage the Yankees, right? It's just, there's some folks that just wouldn't be welcome. And I think that was ignored. I think that to the club's peril at certain levels, they figured that history and tradition and things like that wouldn't matter. And they clearly did. They clearly mattered to the fan base. They clearly mattered to the players. And Benitez had early success. You know, the first few games of the season last year, we were looking really good. And it was going to be one of those things like, oh, I'm going to have to cheer for this guy. I don't really want to do that. But he, I don't know, reverted to form. I don't know what to say other than at times it felt like gross mismanagement. Losing Dinier was just such a bad idea. I'm incredibly happy that Mikulenko came in, and yeah. The story around it is just tremendous, and, you know, proud to have him on our side, and, you know, them bringing Dynamo Kiev in for a game is incredible. I think it's a great idea. And I wish that we could do more to help. At the same time, you know, we had a left back. We needed a right back, right?
Yeah.
And there's players like, you know, Anwar Al-Ghazi. I don't know him from anything. Like, I'm not familiar with him. I don't know what he was up to. He picked up his life and moved.
to be a pawn.
To move here. And I feel terrible. Like, I have no opinion on him as a player because I've never seen him play. Did he get 8 minutes with us? I don't even know if he's
still on the used pitch him. Villa used him so they could get rid of his you know, salary so they could finish paying for Dean. The poor guy was just a pawn in all that. It's just ridiculous. Did he? Oh, man. That was so silly.
It felt like decisions were being made at that level that were intentionally damaging the club.
Yeah.
And at a time where we could really not afford that, we've made some bad decisions. You know, Tosin came in and drastically underperformed. If you look at the price that he came in at, again, seems like a nice guy. He had a bunch of luck in Turkey where he was home. Maybe he was just a lot more comfortable there until the injury. Just seems like it was a bad decision. Obviously, the he who shall not be named, that never really quite worked out. Brought in for his service and for his crosses, and you got glimpses of it, but it wasn't the price that we paid for it. Just never really worked out.
No, there was some unforeseen stuff there too.
But. Yeah, I mean that you, if you could see that coming, you obviously wouldn't sign that player. But
definitely not.
Before that happened, he was kind of one of these guys that had been drastically underperforming.
Yeah, I gotta say that we were expecting him to kind of be the face, you know what I mean? The face, the soul, the match winner, you know, with either service or with a set piece, you know, he was supposed to be a creator, you know, and I think our systems were not helping him. I'll be honest. I don't think we were like every time I don't know if we were doing what we could to kind of cater to who he is and best use his skills. But at the same time, there were times where it felt like he wasn't super into it.
Yeah.
You know,
Hamed's the same thing with Hamed, right?
Yep.
Paid a bunch of money, a man with a touch that would make you cry. Like, he had some of the best touches I've ever seen on a pitch, but wildly inconsistent, seemed to be, you know, struggling with positioning his entire time here, would have these flashes of absolute brilliance, but it was almost like we didn't have enough quality around him to make it make sense. You know, I'm reminded of, you know, Messi on those early Argentinian teams where he's out there, you know, bringing the ball box to box and the rest of the team's literally just standing watching him like, wow, look at him go. And he's like, hey, is anyone going to make a run or do anything? I don't know that we have the quality for Hamed. And I think that he also got complacent pretty quick in that.
He did.
That system, you know, him flying home early before the last game, that rubbed me the wrong way. You know, him posting on Instagram from his private jet as he flies home. Yeah, he was injured, but
not cool. I don't like
You know, it's your approach to your club. It's your approach to your team. A phenomenal soccer player, but not maybe a good fit for us.
Yeah.
And certainly Rafa was never going to let him do anything he came in.
No, he wanted players to. He needed players that everyone that would be a part of the defensive solution, and Hamed was no part of it. So, you know.
Yeah.
It
has seemed that we've made decisions over the past 6-7 years where you start to wonder, like, where did that even come from? Like, how did that get decided? Why did that get decided?
Oh, yeah.
And it was, bizarre, some of the things that we would do. So the fact that we were able to kind of mount a campaign to stave off relegation, I was going to say, like, I've never lived through a relegation battle, but any Everton fan hasn't either. You know, none of us have actually lived through a relegation battle before. So that was something that was exciting that I would prefer never to do again. I don't ever want to have to do that ever again. Because that was awful and stressful. And, you know, the 5-0 or 5-1 loss we had at Arsenal to end the year, I suspect those guys were still probably a little tipsy out on the field. Just, you know, having to kick around before the,
I was psyched. We got a goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was so much more into the other games that day because I saw that and I was just so blissful that it didn't actually matter that we were playing like ass. I was like, you know what? That's okay. All right.
To not have indigestion while watching a soccer match. Really nice change of pace.
So overall, how do you feel about Frank Lampard as a manager? And then let's move on to Farhad really quick.
So
getting too upset.
Lampard as a manager, I still don't think that we know, right? Because he's had a few months. They were desperate months, mm-hmm. where, you know, and back in the Big Sam days, when we brought Sam in to prevent us from further damage, that was some ugly ass football. That was really miserable to watch, but it worked. So I don't know if Frank was able to actually implement anything that he wanted to do other than the desperation play of getting us to stay up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we've really seen kind of a Lampard team relaxed and playing the way that they want to play. I think the amount of pressure that was put on them immediately from day one, from January, it was, hey, this has gone very, very bad and Frank has to fix it. I just don't know that there's a tremendous amount of change and growth that you can do. And clearly there was some inspiration that we had towards the end, some performances that Chelsea performance was, you know, magical. Pickford bailing us out time and time again, and the defense standing up strong and you know, sustaining an onslaught. But then you've got these bizarre losses against kind of sub, you know, the Burnley loss, you know, the games where we absolutely gave away points. But I don't know that we've seen a Lampard team. The team that beat Chelsea, the team that came back against Palace, can't be the same team that dropped 5 to Hotspur. They're just not the same team. And my fear is that Frank's still trying to figure some stuff out himself.
I think so.
In which case, that'll be interesting. I think that we're going to have a tremendous amount of turnover this season. Clearly, there are pieces that have to go that have already left the club. Yeah. And depending on what Kevin Thelwell is able to do, bringing new players in and new pieces together for us, I think that's really going to have to inform the overall approach that we take moving forward. I'm excited to see it. I think that we end next year in much better shape with, you know, a Wobbe's emergence that we talked about. Some of our younger players really stepping up. I think Anthony Gordon had an absolute, you know, coming of age year. He's still a little cultish at times. He's still a little wobbly. But as he grows and puts on a little bit more muscle and becomes a real force moving up and down those lines, going to be a special player. You know, I don't know that we get to hold on to both of our strikers. In my ideal world, we do, but a healthy Calvert-Lewin with Richarlison, we've seen that pairing when they're both on, and it is something really, really special. And I would be very excited to get to see them play together. I don't know that that's going to happen. But, you know, if we can keep one, you know, I'd love to see us at least try to stick to that. You know, I'm generally optimistic. I think that we've been able to cut away some of the dead wood that we've had in the roster. The guys that came in, oh my word! I'm Townsend, who is injured, was having a really solid year for us for the price that we got him for. A guy that went out and worked his rear end off for us and made some really good contributions. For me, Gray was inconsistent at times.
He was
had some terrific play. I feel like, with absolutely no insider information here, he tried to do too much at times where he felt the pressure. He felt the pressure of the expectation from the fans and from, you know, what was going on around him and tried to do too much alone when he didn't have to. And had he just taken a little bit of a step back and worked within what the structure of the team was, probably would have been a lot more effective. But you kind of like to see a guy take that personal, and to take it, you know, winning that. So I think we've got some pieces just you know, adding a couple things to it and, you know, replacing from the losses that are coming that we kind of.
So essentially, did you have anything else about any players you wanted to mention? And then talk about Farhad's statement in terms of the way we've spent and that kind of thing. Because there's a transition there if you so desire.
From a player standpoint, I think where I'm most interested in is, you know, what are we going to do with a player like Alon?
Right.
Who, when he's healthy and when he is in form, is a vital part of our midfield, both defensively and in control and bringing the ball forward. So I've seen rumors that entirely different approach, or, you know, we're going to have to bring someone in of equal value. We've got some young guys that still remain really untested. Mikalenko was growing into himself towards the end of the season, but still is a young kid. He's still a very young player. And, you know, with the added emotional stress of what's going on with at home for him, I think this next year is going to be very challenging. Yeah. Because of the sustained nature of what's happening. And hopefully that he'll have some kind of stability around his situation with his family and what's going on. He has some level of comfort there. So the number of question marks are just really significant, and it's concerning. It's concerning.
And we'll go over a few of those. I've written down some of the names of players that have been connected with transfers or some form of contract activity. But I mean, I'll get quick thoughts on each of these names for the transfer window. Is there anything else you wanted to wrap up on season thoughts, though?
I think it was a trying season. You know, more so than anything else, I don't think I'd ever experienced anything like that, especially, you know, kind of remotely. You know, we didn't get to be in Goodison, but I felt it as much as anything. And I was, you know, screaming in my living room and throwing things across the room. And, you know, the moment that we were safe, just, you know, tears coming down my face, the madness of this season. That said, I'd like to not have to go through that again.
I'm with you.
I'd like to have a season where we're growing and this mad dash of desperation. I think I've got somewhat modest expectations for next year. I think top half of the table would be an absolute win for me, considering all of the change that's coming. And, you know, I want to see progress and growth and, you know, continued success within the goals of whatever program that Kevin and Frank work on to implement that. So I want to have a style that we see grow and that's exciting, that's fun to watch. And that we're able to bring in some of these young players and develop and grow through. You know, probably not going to happen, but I'd love to see an American player on the team. I got dragged on Reddit for that a few weeks back, but I'd love to be able to have some young American talent be treated the way that Tim was, be treated the way that Donovan was treated, McBride. You know, we have a good tradition of taking care of Americans at Liverpool and making that with Everton Football Club, because I think it would be wonderful for the sport here to be able to point to a player. And I feel like Jesse Marsh has done that with Leeds by bringing Aaronson in. Mm-hmm. And it's a good signing. He's, you know, comes out of the Red Bull kind of academy, so I already don't like him, but he's a good player. He's an exciting player, and I think Leeds was really smart to go get him. But I'd love to see some American talent be brought in and utilized. Right. So,
well, with Aaronson, though, at least he came from Philadelphia first, and he wasn't at New York Red Bulls. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
he didn't go all the way through. You know what I mean? So, it could be so much worse, right? yeah, and I think there is a. I'm not averse to a little bit of young American talent on our team. I'll be curious for the different possibilities that could surface this summer. Aaronson's a player I've liked for a long time, but I was worried he just wasn't built physically for the Premier League yet. I was, you know, similarly to Pulisic, to be honest with you, I thought neither one of them was physically ready for the demands of the Premier League, because it's hard to survive a season and not be super injury prone. And I was worried that they were all a little on the more slight side. So I'd like to, you know, and to be honest with you, Pulisic has been injury prone for the most part since he's been at Chelsea. So, you know, I think the only way you're going to be able to get people excited about, you know, signing a young American talent is when they start to prove themselves a little bit more on the international stage. Because for now, we still suck, according to a lot of people, you know, and trying to get people excited.
DC has a kid named Kevin Paredes who is, I think he's 19 or 20. Just went to Wolfsburg. I spent the last he was a spindly little kid, but he was fast. Mm-hmm. He was aggressive, he was creative in his attacks, and you know, that my heart so happy to have an Everton Paredes jersey would be incredible. But I think 2 or 3 years seasoning in Wolfsburg would do him a world of good. Or even, you know, get some other European play for American soccer and for what he's going to be able to do. So,
yeah, I'll be curious to see where Thewell and Lampard choose to go with their signings. I will say, I think a big part of Lampard's I think Frank Lampard's ability to adjust to the relegation battle, I think a lot of it came from, I feel like his backroom staff is so good. I feel like he just has a really good set of coaches advising him. And because I feel like he just didn't have a ton of managerial experience when he came in. So I think there was an element of him being very naive. And then he started growing into it. And I don't think it was just him. I think he's just got a really good staff. I think you put it all together and it's a good package deal, which is cool. Yeah. And I think you saw players growing under him because he's a player. He's a former player, man. And he knew how to sit there and connect with people and connect with players and get the most out of them. So I think if you take the total package, I'm excited about next season. I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be interesting. And the first signing looks like it's so close. So close. Looks like Tarkowski from Burnley is about to walk through the door. Because I think he was getting a medical today. So, yeah.
That's the rumor, man. I struggle as an American understanding who is for real and who is not for real. Right. And I think that's the I think anytime I see anything in the sun, I automatically know that that's not worth, you know, looking at twice. But the rumors around the trade deadlines are.
Dude. Oh, man.
It's amazing.
They're absurd, Mike. They're crazy.
It's and sometimes when things happen, you're like, I can't believe there wasn't more gossip and rumor about this happening before it went down with all the other nonsense that's out there. So it's a little bit of Christmas twice a year where we get to find out, you know, who is staying and, you know, what the new toy is going to be. And I don't know much about Tarkowski. He seemed like a solid defender. Lord knows we need help everywhere. So it's not like we can say no to a quality player that is coming to us for, you know, on free. And you know, I know the wages have bothered some people, but if he can stay healthy and perform, I don't have a problem with us paying it.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not my money. So,
well, and it's a free, so that tends to, free transfers always lead to inflated salaries every single time. Other players that I've heard rumors about us bringing in, Harry Winks, there's one. That was another recent one. Those are the two most recent words. And I've heard about an inquiry being made recently for Keen Lewis Potter from Hull. So that's another player. I think he's a winger, forward player. Then you hear rumors about Connor Gallagher, Billy Gilmore, and Armando Broja from Chelsea. Those are three players that were on loan last year from Chelsea that Lampard knows. Recent rumors about Steve Bergwijn from Spurs, Dutch player. And you hear rumors about Christian Eriksen, which I've heard he wants Champions League football. And you know what else I heard, Mike? And I don't want to say it out loud, but I've heard is if you go on Twitter, you see all this, and apologies if you're the person who mentioned this out there, that this is your rumor that you posted. I didn't give you credit. I literally just scan through this all the time. Ross Barkley. That is a name.
That's not a rumor I would start.
Yeah. Oh, not you. Not you, but I meant like somebody out there, I think, posted that there's the potential for that happening. So I usually prefer to give people credit for their exclusives. But that was something someone had mentioned. So yeah.
I gotta tell you, you know, for Ross to come back.
I know. I'm with
absolutely you. A stunning performance of apology and just well written, you know, I was drinking a lot back then. I don't know. I was frustrated. I'd lost my dog. I said some things I didn't mean. I just don't know his response the first time if he were to step out on the field.
I know.
Yeah. You know, you compare that to a Rooney who we let go but never said anything other than kind words about the club, and was incredibly grateful for the opportunity that he was given here, and you know, has a place in his heart for Everton. That is not how Ross left or stayed away.
And he cost us a lot of money. He cost us a lot.
I don't think that would be successful, to be honest.
I'll be with you.
So
anyways, so the rest of those, we're not sure. We'll see what happens. I mentioned it because it's been said. So there's that. So other potential outgoings, Yerry Mina was linked to a transfer today, potentially to Marseille. Obvious rumors, Richarlison to Real Madrid starting to pick up. Don't know anything about that. DCL to Newcastle, potentially. That's a thing. I've heard that we don't want to sell to Newcastle, but I have no idea. Delph, apparently, we're not going to resign him, so he's going to walk. Alan, there's rumors he's going to potentially go
Serie A. I think his contract has expired.
Yeah, just now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Alan part to me is actually coming because it creates a fundamental change that we'd have to go through. You know, DCL is a tough one. We haven't seen him play in a year. You know, he was on the pitch for less than 2 hours for us. This is, you know, in 2022. He certainly seemed to be getting his form back, and boy, he had the right form at the right time.
Right time
for us against Palace, but I would find it hard to. Carlo understood what he had, and I was shocked that he didn't take him with him the first time. Really surprised that call didn't come sooner. But the year that he had and the heart that he showed, I wouldn't fault for a heartbeat if he went on to Real. It just, you know, that's a kid who deserves to be playing at the absolute highest level of football. And I would wish him well, and I would cheer for him in any league that he goes on to. You know, he fought for us when there was no reason to. You know, he's going to be successful wherever he goes. He didn't have to tear his heart out and put it onto the field for us. He did every game he walked off just bloody and left it out there. If we're not able to keep him, which I doubt we are, absolutely wish him the best, and I'll cheer from everywhere, you know, that he goes. You know, DCL to Newcastle is tough. They have a bunch of money all of a sudden, and they seem to want to spend it. So I think there's probably a number that the team has that if Newcastle come close to it or exceed it, they'll pull the trigger on that, counting on the fact that they've got some young talent up and coming. Mm-hmm. That's tough to say, though. I mean, that would be tough to see him in a different kit.
Yes.
That one would hurt. But I don't know that he fits in other leagues as well. Just right. With what he brings to the table and his kind of approach and attack to the goals, it's very much an English style. So,
I'd hate to lose both of them.
Could be potentially a very hard. I mean, you would think that Real shows up with enough for Richarlison where that takes the pressure off of us having to move on from DCL.
Yeah.
Ideally, that would be, you know, and you know, Carlo has said some very nice things about us. You know, let's see if he can convince the pocketbook to open a little bit wider. You know, and if Richie has to go, let's get well compensated for him and taken care of on the back end.
Yeah, if we're selling to a Super League club, they need to pay.
Yeah. You know? Now the champions of the Champions League, sure, they can sell a few more t-shirts and pick up Richarlison for, I don't know, 80.
Why stop there? It's it's a hefty price tag would go a long way toward cushioning the blow, and I would be really curious to see how we reinvest, because that we have not done well with that in the past. Not many clubs. I haven't seen a lot of clubs that do. So I'd be really curious how we go about that. It wasn't a question. I was just saying that I'd love to see us reinvest, essentially, to see if we can learn from the lessons of last time. Is there anything else on the transfer window that you got? Because other than that, that's pretty much all I got.
Yeah, I keep hitting refresh on Twitter and Reddit, hoping to see some real news, and you know, hope that you know, Kevin Thadwell's been quiet, which hopefully means he's been working hard to figure out what the right pieces are.
Yeah,
and I really hope that Mashiri and the board let him make the decisions and let him make the calls. Because we've lived for several years with some just awful decisions, and it's time to let the professionals do it. I mean, they brought Marcel Brands in and then basically took everything away. I don't, he must have had like a PlayStation in his office. I don't know what he was doing other than, you know, biding time, waiting for Farhad to stop, you know, messing around.
Yeah,
he must have been incredibly frustrating for him because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he said, hey, what if we get Gaultier to be our next manager or Graham Potter? And I'm sure he's like, no, Benitez. Why would you go Rafa Benitez when you got Gaultier interest in the project? I cannot understand that, but whatever. So
yeah.
I'm like you, that statement that he put out, that Mashiri put out, it'd have been cool to see some words of like him saying, I own mistake. I own some of these mistakes. These are some of my mistakes. But instead it was we, and never was it like, hey, my bad on Benitez, my bad. You know, it was, and I talk to my kids all the time about owning their mistakes.
The closest he came, and the first part of the first sentence of the second paragraph is, mistakes have been made, and for that, I want to apologize to all of you.
Hmm.
And I felt like I needed three more paragraphs of that to really make me feel better. But that's really the highlight of it, where clearly it's probably with the understanding of, you know, he's not going to take the blame for all of it. He'll say it once, but he's not going to. He's going to put it on the club. The club made mistakes. We.
Yeah.
Look, you have a lot of this right now in football. You've got some very wealthy, very successful, incredible people who have had tremendous success in other parts of their life, and they maybe are a fan of the sport, and so they decide to buy a club as something to do on the side. And and you're seeing it. You're seeing the impacts of that in many ways. You know, my own beloved DC United suffers from the same thing, where we got ownership relegated. You know, it's you've got investor football, both American and the EPL, that this is a product for them to invest in. It's not, doesn't mean anything, you know, but imagine that we would want an owner that would have been on the pitch with us after Palace.
Yeah.
We would want an owner that is down charging the field with the people, because it's the people's club. You want somebody that it means something to when we do this, and we don't, I don't know that we have that right now. Maybe he'll surprise us and come around. I'll tell you, Brantley looks amazing. That looks like going to be a very special place. I'm definitely hoping to get to see some matches there. But I would, and I've seen it happen here at DC United, they took a garbage dump of a new walks, and there were raccoons in the concourses.
Wow.
But that place had a feel and an air of magic about it on game nights, and some of the most special nights of my life have been spent on those sidelines, bouncing up and down with a bunch of other idiots and screaming my head off. And we had our wall of honor there in the stadium.
Wow.
And it was there for us in the history of that club. And they brought us to that new stadium, and they kind of forgot the history. And in DC United at the field right now, they put the wall of honor, they put the tradition of the club, and it's in a breezeway. And they store the garbage cans and the recycling cans in front of it when the stadium's not in use. And it's absolutely heartbreaking.
That sounds terrible.
And I think all of us who wake up in the morning to see these games, who do the drives, who fly to England to go to the matches, you know, if you're a supporter, if you consider yourself more than a fan, it is those special things. It's those things beyond, you know, it's cheering for the kid who chained his neck to the goalpost, right? and so thankful for that kid because we won that game.
Right.
And we want to see him again. We give that kid a contract, right? Put him on the ground screw and let's keep him handy just in case we're down in an important game, chain his ass back up to the post. It's these intangible things that are so important, and the commoditization of our passion has failed every time anyone's tried to do it. They keep trying. They keep thinking that they can capture what's special about Everton, what's special about some of these other clubs, and they can't because it's not that. It's not sellable. It's not marketable. It's not. You know, you can put it on a poster. You can put Richie throwing the flair on a T-shirt, but it's never going to mean the same as it did watching him do it that day. And that thrill. And when you rewound and watched it again, and you were just like, yeah, you felt that. Is what it's an asset category to these folks. And God knows in modern football, we need the folks that have money. I just want to find one that has money and has passion.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot where I'd love to find an owner that has those.
Oh, no, I was going to agree with you and basically say that I think one of the things that the big parts that the thing I, when I interview people on the show, a lot of times, the thing that sticks out to me are the people connections. And that is what it seems to me like is the most important thing about the club. It's about connecting with other people, period. Right. And that is one of the main things that I feel like if you're going to sell anything, it's sell the connection of the supporters to each other and to the team and to the club. You know what I mean? That to me, if you can figure out a way to bring, and that's what I feel like they're doing with these preseason trips. I feel like that's smart. That is a smart way to do it, you know, especially tapping into the fan supporters groups and getting to know who they are and letting them teach them about the community. And it's just a smart move for the club. It's just smart, and I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of it. And when you tell me stories about it, I'm proud of the club, really.
I believe full heartedly that there are passionate people that work for Everton that probably can go and make a lot more money doing something else, right? They have some absolute wizards in, you know, their social media and the graphics, and you know, some of that stuff that gets produced is amazing. There are people that care deeply about this club, that care deeply about us. And I think that is what keeps a lot of us coming back despite mm-hmm. some of the performances yeah. that we've seen through the years. The fact that, you know, we're still gonna show up, we're still gonna sing and dance and love the team for what it could be, maybe even not what it is. The end of this season was one of the greatest examples I've ever seen of a community of supporters lifting up this team and giving them the energy to go forward and battle, right? Yeah. And we as a club would have been saying, no, these guys haven't done it all the season. They're in a relegation battle because they gave up. We're not going to show up. Empty seats for the rest of the season. I'm not going to watch this garbage go down. And that is not what happened. What happened was, you know, those fellows decided that if we go down, we're going to go down in blue smoke without voices. We're going to leave absolutely everything in that stadium. And and you can't quantify that. Can't quantify. Really special.
Well, Mike, that's the end of the show. We're doing all right. We made it through. Congratulations. So
a lot of fun. I talk Everton sometimes with my family, and they're like, "Yeah, we don't know who any of those people are."
Give them pay. So, be patient. They'll learn. This has been
a real joy.
Hey, they're anytime.
Excited for the Baltimore trip.
Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate you coming on. I wanted to make sure I said that, Mike. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with me. It's been really good to talk to you.
Hopefully the editing makes me look a lot smarter than I am.
Oh, you're doing fine. Trust me. Yeah, I mean, you're on here with me, so you're gonna look brilliant by comparison. Trust me. But I did want to make sure everybody, if you're in the Baltimore area, Baltimore Toffees, Mike's Twitter information is there, but the Baltimore Toffees are easy to find on Twitter. It's not a tough thing. So get active in your community, and especially before the big Everton comes to the USA event coming up this summer.
I do want to say if anyone's planning on coming to Baltimore and is looking for advice on kind of where to stay or what to maybe see and do before or during their trip, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at Mike Sprogue. I'm on Reddit the same way. Try to be very blunt about my social media profile, so it's pretty easy to find. Happy to help give advice and steer you away from some of the less desirable parts. If someone offers to give you a wire tour of Baltimore, you should probably just pass that. We'll get you to some of the good places, certainly some good food and keep you safe in town while you're here.
You don't need to visit all the different past like places where Avon Barksdale slept or anything like that. There's no stringer bell moments. It can't be a good thing. If I were everybody, I would take him up on that. That sounds like an awesome deal to be able to know like what restaurants and cool places to stay, neat things to do. I would message the man, frankly. Do my ending spiel here for everybody else out there. Appreciate you listening. We appreciate you subscribing to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel and podcast. If you haven't, try it. It ain't gonna hurt you. Also, on the Toffee Blues store, there are now Everton USA shirts that are in the store. So it's essentially the U.S. national team logo, but it says EFC. And there's like a bunch of different colors and they're kind of cool. And they recently just dropped on the store last week. It's specifically for Everton USA fans. So check that out on the Toffee Blues store, on the Toffee Blues website. Also follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. I think I'm done with my spiel and just under the time limit, which is wonderful. I want to thank Mike Sprogue for joining me. Mike, you're wonderful. And for people listening via podcast, I wish you could see this man's epic beard and headband. It is, you need it in your life. I'm just saying. So, that's it, Mike. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Everybody else out there. We'll try to get to another show next week. Much love to you, Mike. Take care, buddy.
Jerry, thanks for having me in your bedroom.
Gonna have to keep remembering that one. All right, everybody. Much love. Take care. Bye-bye.